Lectionary Lab Live is recorded by Two Bubbas and a Bible, live from Gainesville, Florida, and Brasstown, North Carolina. Welcome, everybody, to the Lectionary Lab Live. I'm John Fairless. I'm here with my Bubba, Delmer Chilton. Say hey, Bubba.
Hey, Bubba.
Hey, man. Good to get up with you today. Always good to hear your voice. We're going to talk a little text today for the Transfiguration Sunday, February the 11th, 2018. We are back in our respective places. You there in Brasstown, North Carolina. I'm here in Gainesville, Florida. And what do you see happening now? As my goodness, we got this Sunday, then we got Ash Wednesday, and we're going to be into Lent. So all of a sudden, we're wrapping Epiphany up and moving right along.
Yep. Transfiguration is one of those that it comes around every year, like Christmas and Easter and
right.
and those sorts of things. And it's one of those that the day kind of almost doesn't override the text, but it's a day. It's a transfiguration. It's the same story. And every year you get a little different take on it. Mm-hmm. So one of the temptations might be to homogenize.
Yeah.
You know, and preach the day and use the gospel lesson as kind of a source of commentary on the whole business of transfiguration. Mm-hmm. And I just want to caution, there's nothing really wrong with that.
Not that there's anything wrong
with that. I mean, you know, it's like Christmas and Easter. I had a friend whose dad was a longtime Lutheran pastor, and I went to Easter service with my friend and his family when I was in seminary, and dad got up and preached an 8-minute sermon. This is the day. And afterwards, my friend said, yeah, it never gets old. I said, what do you mean? He said, oh, he preaches that every Easter. He said, what else is there to say?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
You know, there's that sense of, you know, that. And I guess my main caution is really work with the Mark text mm-hmm. and do the best you can. You know, it's transfiguration, but think about, you know, the things that are in this text that might make it a unique ending of the transfiguration, if you will.
Right.
So that's the first thing. And so a second thing with that is don't try to explain it. I've heard transfiguration sermons where they tried to apply some kind of scientific mm-hmm. Mode to try to say what actually happened.
Right.
Either explaining it or debunking it. Neither one works.
Right.
That's not what people came to church for, particularly the debunking. Like these 2,000 years ago people, they would believe anything. And I'm like, oh, my goodness. Tom Ridenour, who taught preaching at Gettysburg Lutheran Seminary and then at the Lutheran Seminary in Columbia, South Carolina, frequently reminded people, don't preach against your text.
Don't try to work against the text. And I think
don't work against the text.
I think we're wise to keep the caution in our minds as preachers, as we're preparing. I need to be careful neither to try to shoehorn something else into this text from outside of it, and I want to be careful about textual creep,
right.
Which happens. Other texts sort of begin to leach in, you know, or bleach in, since we got bleaching in the text for today. I do want to be careful to that. If I'm going to, and that's not to say we don't, as we always do, cross-reference and use these other texts. There's a richness in the Elisha text. I want to play a little bit with that. I just want to keep in my mind, am I right. being faithful to the gospel text here? Anything else I do, am I being faithful to the text? That's an important question for us.
Make sure, don't say, well, Matthew says, and right. John says, or Luke says. That just gets confusing.
Yeah.
That's fun. There's a difference between teaching and preaching.
Yeah.
And Bible study and proclamation. And that's mm-hmm. my point, is just stay with this text and proclaim what Mark is telling us
right.
in this text about Jesus through the story mm-hmm. of the Transfiguration. So there's that. Second thing is be aware of where this falls in the liturgical year. We are the lectionary lab. So, you know, the lectionary is based on the liturgical year. And so this is the last Sunday of the Epiphany. And the Epiphany, had the texts are built as a series that reveal who Jesus is. There has been this ongoing revelation of who Jesus is. So looking at this text and tying it back a little bit with the Elijah text, which is picked for this purpose, one avenue of looking into this text is to say, what is Mark telling us about who Jesus is through the imagery of this text? That's an interpretive key. And so you have to think about, Moses is law and Elijah is prophets. You got to know that. You got to know that Moses had a moment and that is sometimes, you don't need to mention this, but this Moses story is sometimes the Hebrew scriptures lesson for transfiguration, where he comes out and his face is so shining and dazzling that they have to veil it.
Right.
You know, and there's a little reference to that up in 2 Corinthians, even if our gospel is veiled. You know, this whole, the light shining in darkness, you know, those are tied all together from Corinthians. But, and then, of course, Elijah's story, the chariot of fire, you know, and this dazzling revelation of who Elijah was. So this is very much on the mind of the readers of Mark's gospel when he's writing about what happened on that mountain. And you, in the sermon, you've got to figure out how to say, This is here to let us know who Jesus is and what are the implications of that. Jesus as the fulfillment of the law, Jesus as the ultimate prophet, et cetera, et cetera. So that's kind of some important stuff to play around with when you're preaching as to what is this telling us about who Jesus is. And remembering it starts, you know, we've been, six Sundays. This is the sixth. You know, since the baptism. And this is homiletically, sometimes what I do at this point as you transition seasons is kind of a recap, if you can do it without being too pedantic. Baptism we did, and this, you can sort of say, you know, what a, you know, wow, here we come. We've seen Jesus baptized, and he's gathered his disciples, and he's begun his teaching and preaching ministry, and he's been doing healings. And most of all, he's established the priority, the proclamation of the King of God over the other things he's doing. You know, that kind of story. You know, you can sort of lead up to sort of summarize as you move on to the next.
And I think that's it, sort of remember where we've been and tying us back into this six-week journey that we've been on.
Yep.
And be careful not to say, now, you remember on the first Sunday, my 3 points were, and on the second Sunday, no, not that much. Like you just did it. It's a very quick overview, and we go, oh, yeah. Touch points.
And this all leading up to this day.
Yeah. And preparing us to move on, which is a theme for me today, and I know we're going to look a little bit more at the text, but one of the lenses I'm using as I'm looking at this text today is this sense we've been getting from the gospel journey, especially that Jesus has been not only being revealed, but he's always pointing to, well, let's go to the other towns and villages that I may preach there. Let's go, you know, this is the Savior of the world moving out from, you know, just us, you know, just our little hometown, just our nation, just our people, moving on out. And so Mark's gospel lends itself to this movement.
Right.
He's always ready to move. And you get, Peter said, well, let's just stay right here.
Yep.
This is pretty good. Another one of those moments. And I'm really intrigued. I don't know if we can play with this as we move through these texts. I'm really intrigued with the response of Elisha in the Elijah story, because Elijah says, now, look, I've been called to go over here, but why don't you just wait? Oh, no, I'm going to go with you. And then it happens again. Well, look, I need to go a little further. Why don't you stay here? No, I'm going to go with you. And finally, the third time. And so while not trying to overread the Christian story into the King story, I can't help, and I got to think some of my listeners, you know, we're playing this whole interplay between Peter and later, you know, denying three times and all this kind of stuff. Elisha's determined to keep moving on and is only stopped by the chariot of fire. I mean, he would have held on, I guess, to Elijah's coattails and gone with him. But so I don't know what all that means. It's in my preparatory work that I'm digging around.
Digging around and thinking ideas. About what direction that might go. And one of the things to play with there then is, as you just did, is that what is Mark telling us here about we have to keep moving.
Got
to
keep moving.
As he builds the thing immediately. And this story, I think it's important that this story comes in the middle of Mark. It's kind of like he's built to this climax of who Jesus is, and he's moving on toward Jerusalem. This is one of the things that you put the text in context.
Right.
And what does it mean to do that? And he's been prioritizing the proclamation. You know, the great messianic secret, I think it's sometimes called, about don't tell anybody. Don't tell anybody. And I think part of that has to do with last week's gospel, in which Jesus went out praying and they came and found him and they wanted him to come back and do all the healings. And he said, no, I got to go on. I got to do what I came out to do. Let's go to the neighboring town. Here he says, now don't tell anybody. I think Jesus wants to prioritize proclamation of the gospel and repentance and that. And these other things, he doesn't want people coming to follow him because of the healings and the dazzling and the transfiguration. And they think they're getting, he is truth in advertising, because he knows he's going to a cross and he knows likely they are too. Well, and he wants it clear what it means to follow him.
That's it. Full clarity and not stopping short along the way. Like you said, don't gather followers on the basis of miracles, you know, healings, all of that. Because he tells them, don't say anything until after the Son of Man has risen from the dead. They need to know the full deal.
Right.
There's something about the completion of the mission, but there's also something about, y'all need to understand, this includes a cross and a grave even, and trusting beyond that. So you need to get the full message, and don't run off half-cocked. You know, we used to hear that saying, don't run off with only part of the message. That's a real challenge, I think, also to the church today. Be careful. We're not running off with just part of the message. Be careful. We're not trying to pull a bait and switch with people. You know, come on in to our fill in the blank special event. Yeah. Everything's good. And then we don't say, but, you know, to gain your life, you're going to have to lose it kind of deal. So
I was going to say verses 5 and 6 in Mark's gospel there, I think are the memory verse. Go my Baptist background here. Memory verse for first time preachers.
Yeah. They did not know what to say.
Or they were terrified.
That's a good one.
But, you know, it's typical. Good old Peter. He doesn't know what to say, but he has to say something.
It just feels
This is also the extrovert, ENFP. That would be me.
Yeah.
Extroverts, memory verse, because we're going to say something even if it's wrong all the time, you know, and that's what Peter did. But what's interesting here in Mark's version, it's good for us, let us make three dwellings. He says this, he didn't know what to say. They were terrified. Jesus doesn't respond. You know, it just, the cloud, and God speaks. And so I want to play with this. He says, let's stay here. And then God speaks, listen to him.
Right.
You know, and I'm going to come back to that, listen to him. And then suddenly it was all over.
Yeah.
And they go back down the mountain. And then when Jesus finally speaks, he doesn't quote him. He just says, don't tell anybody what you've seen, not until after the resurrection.
Right.
And applying, as it were, to the church. No, you're not to individuals as much at this point. I think this was written to the church as a community, is to say, you know, you can't stay wherever it is you are. You can't stay there. Mm-hmm. I think this might be a time to talk about a wandering Aramean was my father. The non-stationary nature of the church, and that's hard for us sometimes. Yeah. You know, in the congregation, we are. You know, you read a church history, and I was assistant to the bishop in the Southeastern Synod, and I got gifted with a significant number of church history. Some were published books, some were 3-page typewritten mm-hmm. things that Aunt Myrtle did years ago, and they were all lovely. They were, but 90% of it was when different parts of the building were built.
Right.
You know, and who, you know, and I get that, but we can't major on that as mm-hmm. a community of faith. We can't sit where we are either physically or congregationally in the ministry that we're doing. It's right. always moving on. It's yeah. always changing. And I think that's an underlying message here that Jesus has. We're always moving to where the cross is.
Right.
And when I say that, I mean, the church always has to be looking around and saying, not what would Jesus do as much, but where would Jesus be?
Where would Jesus be? Where would Jesus go? What is moving? What is continuing to move in the kingdom of God, in the kingdom work here? What is moving for us? We may have a physical location. And of course, for many churches, the challenge of leaving a physical location. You and I have been through that with congregations.
Yep.
It's hard. The building, the physical building, becomes invested with the feelings and emotions of baptisms and great worship services and marriages and funerals. And so, almost without intending it, the church becomes that building. You moved a congregation several years ago. I moved one from down here and you know, however the process comes about, there still comes that moment where you're leaving behind an old place and moving to a new one.
It was
It's hard. It's hard work. And so I have to give a little sympathy to Peter here and these guys. Ah, this is so good. Let's stay here. Yeah, well, here, always staying here. God has never been the God that has always stayed here.
You know, I've served two congregations that have been in the location they're in since the 1700s.
Right.
And I'm not complaining that they stayed physically where they were. You have to move it even, you know, a little bit, just so we're clear above mm-hmm. that, and say, don't stay where you are societally. Don't always try to just do the same thing in the same way. Don't change for the sake of change. And some things stay the same, but others, you have to look, where is God calling us to intervene in the world?
That's it. What
mission are we to be about?
Yeah, we may well be in this location we've been in for 150 years or whatever, but where is the mission taking us? Because the mission, I think I'm fairly safe to say this, the mission to some extent is always going to take us outside the walls of the church building.
It's going to take us outside our comfort zone.
Yeah, absolutely. And so there's an element of that in this transfiguration story. Yeah. It would be nice to stay here where everything is bright, but that's not it. Let's head back down the mountain. And there have been a lot of sermons about you can't stay on the mountaintop. And you know, that's true. But I like the story when all the fireworks are over, they look around and they don't see anything but Jesus.
Right.
And so let's go back down the mountain. Come on, boys. It's almost an anticlimactic climax here.
Shh.
Time to get going. There's more to be done. Don't tell anybody until we get the whole picture.
Right. What happened on the mountain stays on the mountain.
There you go. There's your sermon title. Right there. I want to pick up for a minute on the, you know, Peter having just felt like he had to say something and, you know, the whole extrovert thing. And you and I have a lot of fun working together. One of us being an extrovert, one of us being an introvert. I don't know that anybody can tell, you know,
which
one of us that's which. Again, I want to go back to the Elisha story. Notice that there were all these prophets were anxious for Elisha. Because as they're going to Bethel, you know, it says the prophets come out. Hey, did you know the Lord's going to take your master? I know. Be silent. And they go on to the next, to Jericho. Hey, and then here they come out again. Hey, did you know the Lord's going to take your master away from you? Aren't you worried about that? I know. Just be quiet. And the third time, we don't get quite that much detail, except the rest of them are all just kind of standing back. And again, I'm not completely sure what to make of that, but the silence, just let's just be quiet and let's wait and see what happens. And that's opposed to Peter, again, wanting to fill it up. Let me say something. Let me do something. And I'm not trying to raise Elisha over Peter here. There's just interesting contrast and tension in these texts. And
yeah, my one of the greatest bits of advice I ever got from my mother was when I was about 12 or 13. And she told me, said, Delmer, I do want you to always tell the truth. Just don't always be telling it. There are times to say, is it going to be helpful for me to say anything?
Absolutely.
And, or maybe I can just say something, but nothing important to feed my need to speak. But yeah, this is one of those that I think something fruitful could be built here of talking about. You can get Peter saying something because he felt like he had to say something, and Elijah said, you know, just be quiet.
Just be quiet and watch. Wait.
You can build something fruitful about the need to wait until one knows. Mm-hmm. No one has, you know, you could play around with that homiletically. I think that's a great image. Mm-hmm. One of the other things that really interests me, and it sort of tied into this, the season of Epiphany and what we've learned and leading into Lent, is there in two places this month, in this 6 weeks, we've heard, this is my son, the beloved.
Mm-hmm.
All right. The first one was on chapter 1, verse 11, the baptism of our Lord, which begins the season of Epiphany. And it says, the voice comes from heaven and speaks to Jesus. You are my beloved son, in whom I am well pleased. All right.
Right.
We come to this one and we think we're hearing the same thing, but you got to go back and look. The voice from the cloud doesn't speak to Jesus. It speaks to the witnesses,
mm-hmm,
and says, this is my son, the beloved. Listen to him.
Yeah.
And I think the difference between those two summarizes kind of what the transition that has taken place through the Epiphany. Jesus is baptized. You are the Messiah. You're my son. You're my beloved. I am well pleased in you. And throughout the season of Epiphany, Jesus is working through figuring out who he is.
Mm-hmm.
And his gathering disciples are working out, figuring out who he is. And it comes gradually. And then we get to this point and there's this transfiguration and the voice comes again with different words. This is my son, the beloved. Listen to him, which ties in for me to the whole issue of don't tell anybody about this transfiguration because we're about proclaiming the gospel.
Yeah.
Last week, I'm not going to go back and do those healings because I need to go to the neighboring towns and proclaim the gospel. Mm-hmm. Before that, and you can tie that, you know, the week before when he did the healing of the unclean man of spirit in the synagogue, mm-hmm, and everybody was astonished and amazed at what? At his teaching. Mm-hmm. So Mark is letting us know the proclamation of the kingdom of God, the message takes priority. And these other things, I hate to say it, are kind of like to draw attention, to prove, reveal. They're to reveal.
They're part and parcel, and they come, but they were never the point. Yeah. And even exactly on this day, the transfiguration is not the point. Okay, no. It's not it happens. It's significant. We learn from it. I think it's fascinating to talk about what Jesus learns. You know, we tend to think that perhaps Jesus knew every bit of this that was going to happen, and he's just kind of leading these guys along. Well, I know who I am, but I'm going to take them up to the mountain so they can see, or I know this. And if you're not careful, you get a very manipulative Jesus with that. To what extent is Jesus learning and experiencing and following the will of God here. If Jesus has emptied himself and has become human, if he is like us in every point, what is Jesus having to learn? Now, again, I don't want to get sidetracked from this, but it's just keeping that in mind. So these guys have learned, Jesus is learning, and you're right. It's this climactic point that we reach a peak with the mountain, and now we're gonna move on. And Jesus, him too, has that sense. Let's go on down the mountain. Don't tell anybody. There's more to be done.
In thinking about text, there's a whole lot the preacher needs to know that he or she doesn't need to say.
Mm-hmm. True.
But they need that is formative for how they proclaim. Yep. I think your conception of the divine human nature of Jesus mm-hmm. will dictate some of how you represent him.
That's
in a proclamation. And you've got to be, and I think you need to think through how the whole Nicene question mm-hmm. of how is Jesus both human and divine. And I've staked, put my tent, my pole in the ground, mm-hmm. Staked my tent on that kenosis, that emptying, right. And that Jesus had to go through some human development of understanding what it meant for him to be the Son of God, the Messiah, mm-hmm. rather than, coming full blown.
Yeah.
This is a consciousness. Oh, he knew everything.
Yeah, this is not a divine puppet master walking among us and jerking our strings. And I see y'all need to know this. I already know it. No, and that's why in our workshops and when we write, we try to emphasize for us as preachers, do your theological work. That is part of getting in the study. That is part of, if you need to, go back and pull your seminary texts out or find some way to access this. You've got to think about these kinds of things. This is the work of preparation, okay, and knowing. So this is a great example, I think, of and a great time to stop and do that. Who is this Jesus? And our theological formation will have a lot to do with our proclamation, even though it's not, as you say, the time to enter into a lecture. Try to talk to people about the two natures and all of that. Absolutely.
It defines how you present Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the you have to be careful, I think, to not present a Jesus who is removed from that ambiguity of being both fully human and fully divine. In the sense of emphasizing that either he walks on air above ground, or there is kind of a befuddled nice guy, which seems to be the way he gets portrayed in movies all too often. Beatific California guru walking to be nice to one another.
Yeah.
That's not it either. And so you got one of the things as we begin to close out here is that this is a Sunday to remind people, not only in the announcements that there's Shrove Tuesday pancake suppers and Ash Wednesday mm-hmm. services, et cetera, but to remind people that coming down the mountain is an important line. I think that's a great line to end the season of Epiphany with. We've gone mm-hmm. into this revelation of who Jesus is, and it all culminates on the mountain, on Transfiguration, and they come down the mountain. Mm-hmm. And we're entering into kind of a slog at which the resistance builds mm-hmm. at the Jesus proclamation of the gospel. So week after week, you're going to these issues that show where he's going to end up on the cross. Need to say, this is where we're going. And the question of what does it mean to follow Jesus gets more intense and more difficult.
Yeah. Jesus is moving on. Let us go with him. Okay. Let us go with him. The determination of Elisha, as the Lord lives and as you yourself live, I will not leave you. And of course, the disciples are going to make something of a similar pledge, Fall just a tad short, but still, the work of the Spirit, the work of God, the complete, the whole obedience of Christ is going to carry on. And at this point, I think you're right. We've got a great transition. We're heading down the mountain. We're heading down from the mountain to the mundane, and it's the heat's going to get turned up. It's going to get a little bit tough. What will our determination be? Well, Jesus is moving on. Let's follow him. Yep. And so shall we do in the season of Lent when the lectionary lab returns next time. hope everyone has excellent observance of Ash Wednesday this week, and we'll be back to start talking text for Lent. Bubba, anything else to wrap up? We didn't do much on Psalm or Corinthians. Great readings. They're there. But strong message today in Mark. Little tab of Elijah. I don't reckon there's much else for us to do then today, Bubba, other than to tell everybody bye.
Everybody bye.
Ease on down. Ease on. Down the road!
Lectionary Lab Live is a Two Bubbas and a Bible production. Our opening theme is Lock and Key by Silent Partner. We go out this session with Ease On Down the Road, written by Charlie Smalls, performed by Michael Jackson and Diana Ross.
Last a little while.
You just stick with us. And-